This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
This is Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle coming to you live from the Seaport, brought to you by Grey Goose. What a move yesterday in the NFL. Bill Strait, four-time Pro Bowler Steph Diggs to the Texans. 2025 second-round pick. Those are the main parts of the deal. There were other draft picks involved. Buffalo takes on a $31.096 million dead cap hit. And Houston now has a great offseason of name additions in Steph Diggs, Joe Mixon, Danielle Hunter, and just a real belief in the quarterback by the Houston Texans that they are looking at and they're saying, well, now's the time. We have a rookie quarterback and we need to spend around him. Interestingly enough, guys, I believe this is the ultimate vote of confidence by two teams, by one trade in two quarterbacks. The Buffalo Bills are saying we believe in Josh Allen so much that someone that may be an impediment to his success in terms of the emotional part of it, the head part, like the mental part of it, we are removing from the equation. And the Houston Texans are saying we are so good. We have such a great quarterback on a rookie scale deal. Let's spend all around for him to be even better than he already is. And that caused Greeny yesterday on Greeny, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time here on ESPN Radio, to give us a take about the Houston Texans.
Maybe he can do for C.J. Stroud what he did for Josh Allen. Although, candidly, Stroud is so far ahead in his development of where Allen was at the same time that the question is not, can Stephon Diggs make C.J. Stroud a superstar? The question is, can Stephon Diggs be the piece that puts Houston over the top in the AFC? I don't think it's overstating it to say this might be that kind of move.
Very interesting. Houston Texans, Super Bowl contender, which would mean you would have to knock off the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't believe they can do that. I don't like this trade for the Texans, guys. I think that you're standing in the way of C.J. Stroud. I know I'm on an island alone here. But how many teams can knock off the Chiefs in the AFC, and are the Texans one of them?
Well, hold on real quick. Why don't you think, hold on, you said you don't like the move.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm sorry, what did you say about C.J. Stroud right then?
About C.J. Stroud, I think C.J. Stroud is great. I think that Steph Diggs may stand in his way like he did with Josh Allen, like he did with Kirk Cousins previously. I think that the way it ended in Minnesota and Buffalo has to be pointed out here.
Okay,
you think Steph Diggs stood in Josh Allen's way?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to circle back on.
I think they stood in each other's way, maybe is a better way of saying it. Because
That relationship
did not work.
Well, you say it didn't work. They got to a conference championship game, and they've won playoff games each of the last 4 years. I mean, we don't have any proof of concept that Josh Allen is a good quarterback without Steph Diggs.
Yeah.
We just don't. That doesn't exist. So to say that Steph Diggs stood in Josh Allen's way, I don't know that to be the case. But what I will say is this. If you're Nick Caserio, the GM of the Houston Texans, you don't make this move unless you think that this makes you one of the teams that can knock off the Chiefs in the AFC. Let me say that again. You don't make this trade unless you believe that it makes you a team that can knock off the Chiefs in the AFC to get to the Super Bowl. And I would agree with them. Based on the production that we've seen from Steph Diggs, this is a guy that's had six straight 1,000-yard receiving season. This is a guy that has 5 years where he's going north of 100 catches. This is a guy that's third in terms of total catches in the first nine seasons of his NFL career, and he's only behind Marvin Harrison and Antonio Brown. That's how prolific Steph Diggs is as a player. That's the kind of impact that he can have, not just in terms of when you throw him the ball, but how he dictates front and coverage to your team. I believe that this trade makes the Houston Texans one of three teams in the AFC that can knock off the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl. I will put the Texans with the Baltimore Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals with a healthy Joe Burrow as the two other teams. That's the caliber of player that Stephon Diggs is. Remember, this is a Texans team that went into Baltimore and for half a football gave the Ravens all they wanted in the divisional round. Like, the Steph Diggs is a guy that can take them to the next level because of how he makes everything easier on the offensive side of the ball for everybody, right? It makes it easier for the running game because now you have less defenders at the line of scrimmage. You got to roll coverage to C.J. Stroud. You got to have a safety over top of him, not to mention the corner that's in primary coverage. Like he's a guy that opens up the field for C.J. Stroud and for all the other skill position players. So I absolutely love the move. I'll acknowledge that it comes with some risk because of the personality of Steph Diggs, but I think the reward is far greater for the Texans.
I understand the risk because there is history with Steph Diggs. We saw it in Buffalo. We saw it in Minnesota where he can be upset about the way that he's used. There may be some tension and he wanted out, seemingly wanted out. But Evan, when you said that you are worried that Steph Diggs will stand in CJ Stroud's way, if Diggs went to Kansas City, we wouldn't say that about Patrick Mahomes. If he had gone to Cincinnati, we wouldn't say that about Joe Burrow. If he went to Baltimore, we probably wouldn't say that about Lamar Jackson. And if CJ Stroud really is that guy that we think he is, and if he really is going to continue to be in the upper echelon, elite tier of quarterbacks in the NFL, then I don't think it's going to be a problem for him.
I don't think any of those teams would make this move. I just don't. I don't think the Kansas City Chiefs would ever make a move like this. Because you don't, like, Steph Diggs, it's okay that Steph Diggs is a big personality. It's okay that Steph Diggs wants the ball. It's okay that he wants to get paid. I think the beauty of the Houston Texans is that they reflect the personality of D'Amico Ryans and CJ Stroud. And you can't do much better than that we saw off of 1 year. That you described him, CeCe, him being Diggs, as an alpha. I'm not interested in another alpha. I have my two alphas. I don't need another alpha there. I want followers of Stroud. I'm not looking for additional leaders. I don't need that. And if you say, well, you're getting him below value, $19 million versus $25 million is what most wide receivers get. We're sure he's not going to ask for $25 million? We're sure he's coming in and just happy with this contract and that's never going to be a thing now with him? It's never been that way before. He just got an extension. He wasn't happy in Buffalo. I just look at this trade, and you may be right about the Texans, that they may be one of the three teams that theoretically can knock off the Chiefs. I have way more faith in the other two you mentioned, the Ravens and the Bengals. I just am not a believer in Steph Diggs. I love C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans in that combination, and I'm not looking to add another piece to that puzzle that is going to insert himself into the leadership of the team. I don't want that.
But if I'm the Houston Texans, I'm willing to take that gamble.
Yeah.
Based on the production and the proven commodity that I know Steph Diggs is, I have a finite amount of time to capitalize on CJ Stroud's rookie contract.
Yeah.
He showed me so much last year, not only with the way he revitalized the organization, the playoff run that they made, but just his growth throughout the season as the franchise quarterback. I am not wasting this guy, and I am not wasting this contract. And if Steph Diggs was that unhappy in Buffalo, if I'm the Houston Texans, that's the way I'm framing it to him. We are going to be the place where you can come, you can settle in and be happy, and you can jump on this ship as we continue to ascend. But you have to do it our way.
Yeah.
And if I am the powers that be in Houston, why would I not go out there and get any proven commodity and any talented player that I could and bring them in and try to build around CJ Stroud and capitalize on this window while I can?
I think culturally it's a better opportunity to be a fit for Steph Diggs as opposed to the two previous places that he played. Remember, in Minnesota, it was Kirk Cousins as the quarterback with Mike Zimmer as the head coach. In Buffalo, it's Sean McDermott with Josh Allen as the head coach. In Houston, it's going to be D'Amico Ryans and CJ Stroud. I just think in terms of communication, in terms of transparency, it's probably going to be a little bit easier for Steph Diggs to fit in that environment than he did at his two previous stops. Now, there's pressure on Steph Diggs to be able to make it work. All of the cryptic tweeting from him and his brother, that's going to have to go by the wayside.
Sure.
Because we all understand the stakes when it comes to the Houston Texans. Because to your point, Smalls, there is a finite window that you have C.J. Stroud on a rookie contract, and it's only going to be the next two seasons. After that, you're going to have to pay him north of $60 million a year.
And he's going to be worth every penny.
He's going to be worth every penny, but you got to try to make that push to get it done in
Absolutely.
This window. It's exactly what the Kansas City Chiefs did with Patrick Mahomes. And it's what any functional franchise does. But I'm fascinated by the dichotomy between the two organizations that made this move, because you're basically in a situation in Buffalo where you're forced to get off of a lot of the big money guys because of what Josh Allen's contract does to your salary cap. And so that changes the composition of your team. And the assumption is when your quarterback's cap number goes up, that he's in a position to elevate the talent around him. That's going to be what Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott asked Josh Allen to do, to elevate the talent around him in a way that we've never before seen in his career. So I'm fascinated to see if he can get that done. And then when you look at it from the Texans' standpoint, they are taking advantage of having a quarterback on a below-market deal, and that's absolutely what they should do. Now, you can argue whether or not Steph Diggs is the right guy. You know, could you have made a move for T. Higgins? Could you have made a move for Brandon Ayuk? I'm assuming that the asking price, both from the player and those respective teams, would have been a lot higher than what it cost you to get Steph Diggs. But I love this move because you're getting a highly productive player that is still in his early 30s that's going to give you an opportunity to open up the field and open up the offense with your OC, Bobby Slowick.
Yeah, the circumstances are a little bit different, but this gives Russell Wilson to Pittsburgh vibes for me. He had a reputation that preceded him. It didn't end well in Seattle. It certainly didn't go well in Denver. And what did we say about him going to Pittsburgh with Mike Tomlin? This is your opportunity to change the narrative about you. And if you can't make it work there, we are going to look at you differently. It's going to reinforce what some people think about you, or it's going to change the opinion of how some people think about you. And I think it's the exact same thing with Steph Diggs. He has the history that precedes him in Buffalo and Minnesota, going to a place, different sample size, obviously, than Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh. But so far in D'Amico Ryan's and C.J. Stroud's tenure in Houston, it's been great. Small sample size. But if Steph Diggs can't make it work there, or some of those same behaviors come forward, we're going to talk about him in a certain way. And I think that he should at least have the self-awareness to know that he has a great opportunity to go to a place that should have a good culture in place and change the narrative around him.
I will say this. Last year, the Texans had the fourth most passing plays of 20 yards or more. So they're explosive. Adding this element, adding Steph Diggs, that makes you the most explosive offense in the NFL. That's what we're talking about. That's the potential that this move gives C.J. Stroud. It's going to be exciting to watch. It's going to be great. It's going to be spectacular.
Well, there's more to that conversation because, you know, the Bills part is really interesting, what you brought up there about Josh Allen and the pressure on him now, because the Bills were not on that list of teams that could potentially compete with the Chiefs, where for the last 5 years, right, we had them on that list of teams. Have they removed themselves from that list? Plus, are they still the favorites in the AFC? Because AFC East? Because one person on ESPN Radio believes that there's one team in that division that is already done, and another person may not agree with them. We'll get to that next. It's Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Well, CeCe has written off the Jets already. It's April. Mike Greenberg on Greeny, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time here on ESPN Radio, very much disagrees with CeCe.
If we're just talking about the football piece of it, Aaron Rodgers, from the moment he got there until the moment he got hurt, was the best leader the Jets have had since Rex Ryan. Whatever you think of his politics, his social positions, or anything else, if you're a football fan, if you're a fan of the Jets, I would rather have Aaron Rodgers setting the tone than anyone else they have in the building. So what Chris Canty is pointing out as a problem, I actually think is a good thing. And I don't think it's impossible that it works out really well. Now, are they trying to catch lightning in a bottle? Of course. Is that an incredibly hard thing to do? Of course. Is it unlikely that it works out to the nth degree? Yeah, but they could. And Aaron Rodgers is the least of my concerns when it comes to all of that.
How is he the least of your concerns? Like, you quite literally don't know if he's going to be able to stay on the field. And here's the other thing when it comes to the leadership that Aaron Rodgers displayed last year. It was all up until they started playing the games. Then once they started playing the games, what were the New York Jets? They were a dumpster fire. They didn't know what they were doing with the quarterback position. Oh, it was Zach Wilson. Then they benched him. Then they went with the Boyle kid. Then they wanted to go back to Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson didn't want to go back. He was, quote unquote, reluctant to step in. And then what happened? The head coach is checking his assistants and saying, give me your phones because I don't trust that you guys aren't the leaks to the media. And Aaron Rodgers was the impetus for that. He was saying, hey, we've got to make sure all of this stuff is buttoned up within the organization. This guy, it is unbelievable how he's Jedi mind tricked everybody, including Greedy, into thinking he's a good leader. Well, where the hell was that leadership his last year in Green Bay? Where was it? I couldn't find it, especially in week 18 when they lost to the Detroit Lions in a winning end game, in a game that Detroit had nothing to play for. Where was that leadership this year once this team hit some adversity? It was nowhere to be found. Aaron Rodgers was more consumed with having the cameras on him in the pregame while he was throwing the football around, teasing everybody that he was actually going to come back this year when we all knew that there was no shot. And here's the other part about the Aaron Rodgers, quote-unquote, leadership in the season. Think about all of the different teams that had to change from their starting quarterback to a different quarterback. Think about those teams and what they did and how they pivoted. Hell, the Cleveland Browns, down the final stretch, moved over to Joe Flacco, a guy that was in the Jets building in years prior. The Cleveland Browns turned to Joe Flacco, called him off the couch, and Joe Flacco led them to a playoff berth. You think Joe Flacco couldn't have been better than what Zach Wilson was or what Tim Boyle was this year? Of course he could have, but why won't you bring in Joe Flacco? You know why? Because Aaron Rodgers is there. So put that in your leadership pipe and smoke it. That's the problem with Aaron Rodgers. He limits what your franchise can do or what they're willing to do because he's basically taking control of your franchise. This guy is a cancer that's metastasized throughout the entire building in Florham Park. And I don't know why Jets fans can't see it. That's why I said your season is over before it starts. It's not about your talent. It's about what Aaron Rodgers makes your franchise. He is a culture killer. And because, from a production standpoint, he's not the same guy that he was 3 or 4 years ago when he won back-to-back MVPs, the juice ain't worth the squeeze. But guess what? Sometimes you got to learn things the hard way, and Jets fans are going to relearn that this season. 2023 wasn't a fluke. It wasn't. And it's not just about Aaron Rodgers being healthy. Him being on the field is not a cure-all. It's not. Because he just can't help himself. And unfortunately, the Jets are going to pay the price for it.
Yeah. You bring up the Cleveland Browns. They certainly didn't wither when they had a quarterback carousel going on.
No.
When Joe Burrow went down, the Cincinnati Bengals still managed to stay together and pull out a 9-8 season. You didn't have a lot of success in Minnesota, but when Kirk Cousins went down, it's not as if he was a massive distraction to the team.
No.
They galvanized around him. They were wearing the Kirko Chains t-shirts.
And they actually made the decision to trade for Josh Dobbs. Now, that didn't work out, but it made sense. They were aggressive in trying to do something rather than going with a quarterback that you knew it wasn't going to work out with in Zach Wilson. But because Aaron Rodgers likes Zach Wilson, we're going to give Zach a chance. That's what Aaron Rodgers does. He's gonna bring Aaron Rodgers and all of the people in his circle, all of the people that he likes are going to be around him. And Zach Wilson is somebody that he likes, somebody that he has an affinity for. And so the organization gave him more rope than he probably needed to have. We knew that Zach Wilson ain't it. Like, Jets fans already understood that coming into this season. But why on God's green earth would you think that that would be good enough in this year where you have higher expectations? It just didn't make sense. But the only reason that I can think of that the organization would continue to give Zach Wilson an opportunity is because Aaron Rodgers wanted him to have the opportunity. So how in the hell is that leadership?
Do we think that Aaron Rodgers can put the New York Jets, the team, and the organization as a whole above his personal wants and needs or his personal agenda for an entire season?
No.
I think there is an argument to favor the Jets. I just don't think the argument's been made. And I don't believe in the Jets at all. I don't understand the association with Rodgers and leadership. Like, that's just not the word association I would choose for him. If I'm going to sit here and I'm going to say that CC is wrong about writing the Jets off, just for argument's sake, right? I think my argument would be, give me the team in the AFC East that has gained more this offseason than the Jets. Because you look around and you say, well, what did everybody else gain slash lose? If you're a believer in Steph Diggs with the Bills, and I'm not, they lost Steph Diggs. Okay, that's fact. If you're a believer in the Miami Dolphins, you also have to acknowledge they lost a lot. Christian Wilkins, Van Engel on their defense, they lost a lot of guys. New England lost the greatest coach in the history of the sports, right? And you look at the Jets, Mike Williams comes in, Hassan Reddick comes in, they make trades along the offensive line. The argument against CeCe, to me, if there is one, if you want to argue against the idea of the Jets being done, is there is no team in that division that has gained more this offseason than the New York Jets have. Now, stop, period, next sentence. The problem is, then, do you believe in Rodgers? And I'm not a believer in Rodgers. But leadership has never been the word that I would use to describe him, even if I'm a fan of his.
Nope, nobody has. And my question is this, Ev. Greeny says that Aaron Rodgers is the least of his concerns. What are the other concerns that you have with the Jets based on all of the moves they've made this offseason?
Coaching? I mean, maybe he's saying that coaching
is
more?
Well, you say it's coaching. The defensive side of the ball did what they were supposed to do. Rob Saleh's a defensive coach, last I checked. The defensive side of the ball
offensive coach?
They were an elite defense. Of course Rodgers is the offensive coach. That's why Nathaniel Hackett still has a job as an offensive coordinator.
Exactly.
The offense is Rodgers. It is.
Which is actually counter to leadership.
The organization is Rodgers. It is. Right. It is. And Rob Saleh, as the head coach, is really only responsible for the defensive side of the ball and special teams. Aaron Rodgers does everything else. I mean, last year he was playing general manager, too, with bringing over all of his super friends, right? Billy Turner and Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard. And, you name them. He's all guys. It's a who's who of Aaron Rodgers' friends that came to play with him at Florham Park. That's what it was. So, I mean, again, the defensive side of the ball, the coaching aspect of it, I'm not as concerned with. The biggest question mark is Rodgers. It's whether or not he's going to be able to stay healthy, and then beyond that, is he going to be able to produce at the level that the Jets will need him to in order to win this division, in order to get to the playoffs? And I am skeptical of that. I doubt it, because it's not just about the talent on paper. You have to have chemistry. You have to have that rapport. You have to have that culture that allows you to elevate beyond the futility that's led to the longest playoff drought in North American team sports. And I'm just not confident that Aaron Rodgers can set the culture in that way. But yet and still, that's what the Jets are depending on after they lived through the nightmare that was the 2023 season.
I really was confident that he could set that culture in the offseason / preseason, because as Greeny outlined, he did everything right.
Yeah.
He was going out with his teammates in New York City. When you saw him on Hard Knocks, they were in awe of him. He really did look like a different version of himself, a revitalized version of himself. It felt like he understood that he has a finite amount of time left in his football life, and he was really going to pour into the Jets. But then four plays in, he gets hurt, and what happens? He becomes the drama. He becomes the distraction. To your point, he couldn't help himself. That's why I asked the question, for an entire season, can Aaron Rodgers put the Jets above what he wants to talk about or what he wants to do? And I don't think he can. So why would I think the results would be any different?
And what you just said, Smalls, is the most important thing. In an NFL season, there will undoubtedly be adversity. When we won a Super Bowl in 2011, our team lost four games in a row. They were talking about firing everybody, including Tom Coughlin.
Wow.
And who had just won a Super Bowl 4 years prior. They were talking about firing everybody. What happens to your team in those moments when you meet that adversity? What's the character of the leaders in your locker room? That's the part where I'm skeptical of the Jets winning the division and getting into the playoffs. Because I don't trust the character of Aaron Rodgers in the way of leadership. I just don't.
ESPN NFL analyst Damian Woody will join the conversation next. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Monster trade in the NFL yesterday. Steph Diggs going to the Houston Texans from the Buffalo Bills. Damian Woody, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us. All right, so nobody has played a game with their new teams yet. Their picks haven't been made, and we're not even in the season. So, Damian, who won the deal, the Bills or the Texans?
Listen, honestly, man, I think it was a good deal for both teams, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I do. Clearly, think about this, guys. The Bills are going to absorb a $31 million dead cap hit just to get the guy out of the building.
That's a hell of a lot of addition.
Think about that. Hey, think about that. Everyone's been talking about the relationship, and I've been saying that the relationship hasn't been right since that Cincinnati playoff loss, where we saw how animated Stephon Diggs was on the sidelines in that playoff loss. The fact that the team is willing to absorb that and then give away a 2025 draft pick just to get you up out the building tells me everything I need to know. And so that's on the Bills side. For the Texans side, this is how you do it when you hit on the young quarterback. When the young quarterback shows you that he's a dog, then you push your chips all in because you know you have a window to try to, you know, put together the best team possible before you have to pay him, and the salary cap, you know, salary cap structure looks a lot different. So I think it's a win-win for both teams, but clearly Houston is going all in.
So let's get to the Josh Allen of it all. Bills general manager Brandon Bean said he gave Josh the heads up that this was a possibility mm-hmm. in this offseason. So I'm assuming that Josh signed off on the move. I'm curious from your perspective, because we don't have any proof of concept that Josh Allen is a good quarterback without Stephon Diggs. How much pressure does this put on Josh Allen to show that he is an elite player, given all the roster changes that the Bills have gone through this offseason?
Hasn't there been pressure on Josh Allen? We've been talking about Josh Allen and Bills for years. Mm-hmm. Ever since that divisional, you know, that divisional game against the Kansas City Chiefs, it's like we've been waiting for the Bills to take the next step. But they've been taking a step backwards. It seems like mm-hmm. every year they've progressively gotten a little bit worse. And I think, and I think, you know, myself, Chris, I think you've alluded to it as well. That iteration of the Bills that we've seen over the past, what, I think 3 or 4 years, they're done. That's over with. Now they have to start a new chapter. But I always say when you have Josh Allen, you're always going to have a shot. But I'm going to tell you what. Now we're going to see, with Stephon Diggs not in the building, can Josh Allen elevate the guys around him? Because that's what the greats do.
That's what the elite quarterbacks do.
That's what the and I do think that Josh Allen is one of the top three quarterbacks we have in our league. But we're gonna get a more definitive picture this season without Stephon Diggs.
Oh, I got to follow up with that one. Yeah. So if he is a top three quarterback for the Bills, in the league for the Bills, does that change what the expectations for the Bills should be in 2024?
No, I always say,
Steph Diggs being out of the building change anything?
No, it should not change.
Because it didn't change in Kansas City.
No, that's what that was the point. You know, it's funny, we were having a production meeting for Get Up, and that was one of the points I made, was like, listen, Patrick Mahomes is 1-on-1, but if we're going to say that Josh Allen is one of the 3 or 4 quote unquote franchise quarterbacks that we have in our league, we already saw what the guy in Kansas City did. They traded away Tyreek Hill, and all he did was go out and win back-to-back Super Bowls.
Oh, is that all?
That's all he did. So, you know, if we're gonna put Josh Allen in that same light, we need to see Josh Allen have similar type of success, you know, now in this new role without Stephon Diggs in the mix.
So, with all that being said, are the Bills still the favorite in your mind to win the AFC East? Because Miami's had a talent drain, and they were kind of on fraud alert all last season. New England is going through an entirely new rebuild with Bill Belichick out of the building. The Jets have a lot of talent, but they're still the Jets. So with Steph Diggs out of the mix in Buffalo, are they still the favorite to win
the division? Everything I say about the Jets, I always preface with but. Always.
Why?
But you know, you know why. You know why. You've been in this market as long as I have. You know why. Okay? Now listen, on paper, Smalls, on paper, they have the best roster in the AFC East.
The Jets.
The Jets do. There's no question about that. But on paper, because there's question marks everywhere. We got a 40-year-old quarterback coming off of Achilles. Both tackles, you know, that are over the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Williams, their new acquisition from the Chargers, coming off of ACL. Like, Nathaniel Hackett, is he even cut out? Can he even call, you know, competent plays on a week-to-week basis? Like, there are so many questions as it relates to the Jets. But, again, I just go back. On paper, they look good on paper.
So I gotta circle back because we were having a conversation earlier that was inspired by Mike Greenberg. And Greeny said that Aaron Rodgers is the best leader that the Jets have had since Rex Ryan.
By the way, he said he got a bone to pick with you. I think I was listening to the radio yesterday. He said, you know what? I got a bone to pick with Chris Cannon, but he's too damn big for me to really confront him.
That's true.
But tell Greeny, come down here.
He come get some, come get some smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, listen, as far as best leader, where? When? When? I haven't seen it. I mean, listen, we were just talking. The last time we saw Aaron Rodgers play high-level football, like the Aaron Rodgers football that we've been accustomed to seeing, you know, for so many years, was probably, what, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
Think about that. At this point in his career, it's kind of a long ways away. So I still think Aaron Rodgers is a really good quarterback, but we can't discount the fact that he hasn't played high-level football in 3 years and he's coming off of Achilles. Those are questions that he has to answer.
We're talking with Damian Woody, ESPN NFL analyst here on Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. I just want to go back to something that was mentioned here. So we're saying that the Bills' expectations do not change with Steph Diggs on the Texans. We obviously saw that the Kansas City Chiefs have been extremely successful without Tyreek Hill. I know I've been on this soapbox, but I'm going to continue based on the lead-in. Why do we pay receivers? Why? Why, if you have a quarterback, do you ever pay receivers? If you're going to tell me that Steph Diggs walks out the door and CeCe and Smalls are telling me how good he is and how much of a help he could be to the Texans, why do we pay them?
Because of the way the game is now. I mean, think about how the game is played now. You know, there was a point where, you know, you could get physical with the receivers. You can't do that anymore. And I always talk about, you know, when you talk about how the game has changed, think about this. There was a time, CeCe, you know this, there was a time where the best athlete was where? Running back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But the game has evolved. Now your best athletes are playing where? Wide receiver, yep. Quarterback. Because because of how the game has changed, now people are putting their best athletes at those positions. And so where are we seeing the most depth in the NFL draft? Wide receiver. There's a ton of them out. There's a ton of them out there, and they're all going to get paid. So to me, it's about how the game has changed as far as the rules and the structure of the game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, look at the Baltimore Ravens, the teams that were in the Final Four last year.
Right.
Baltimore Ravens, Detroit Lions, the San Francisco 49ers, and the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, two of those teams had all-pro wide receivers. One of those teams had – well, two of those teams have what? Hall of Fame worthy tight ends.
Yeah.
Well, that's different. That's the one, CeCe. No, I believe that.
But I'm just saying, the passing game is such a focal point of what we're doing. The Baltimore Ravens got to the AFC Championship game for the first time with Lamar Jackson, and they drafted a receiver in the first round in Zay Flowers. So, I mean, like, the receiver makes an impact, and it's not just about the numbers or the target share. It's the threat that receiver poses that when they can dictate front and coverage that opens it up for everybody else.
Yes.
That's why you pay those guys all that money. That's why Tyreek Hill gets $30 million a year, because he's the most explosive player in the NFL.
There's no question about it. I mean, just there's a litany of them, from the Jamar Chase to Justin Jefferson.
Think about that. Jamar Chase, we drafted in the Cincinnati Bengals, go from not winning a playoff game to being in the Super Bowl.
Right. All because of, like,
obviously, they didn't win a playoff game in three decades, and they went to the Super Bowl when they drafted Jamar Chase.
Right, think about it. You go out and you get Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and the whole fortunes of the franchise completely turns around.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One more thing about Steph Diggs, Damian. Evan brought this up earlier about the baggage or the history that precedes Steph Diggs in Minnesota and in Buffalo. Do you have any concerns that that could permeate into Houston and maybe be a disruptor at all for C.J. Stroud and his growth?
I don't, because I'm a big believer in D'Amico Ryans. I think I'm going to say a couple of things. Number one, let's just be honest. He's going to Houston. There's a difference between and I'm not trying to disparage the city of Buffalo, but CC, you know, like going down to Houston, H-Town, it's one of the better destinations to play in the National Football League.
Oh, no
You're
doubt.
Playing indoors, no state tax. You know, it's a pretty good time down there in H-Town.
Not to mention the head coach, quarterback, culturally might be a better fit for Steph Diggs than Mike Zimmer and Kirk Cousins in Minnesota or Sean McDermott and Josh Allen in Buffalo.
Yes, absolutely. So and on top of that, I don't even know if he's the true number one down in Houston.
Nico Collins
is a dog down there now. And then you got Tank Dell down there. So he won't shoulder the load like he was in Buffalo. Because, you know, in Buffalo, all the coverage and everything rotated over towards Stephon Diggs. That won't be the case down there in Houston.
You know, we can talk about football all day long. I saw the smirk on CeCe's face, if you're watching on ESPN2, when Damian Woody said to CeCe, you know, playing in Houston's a little different. You know what I'm talking about with H-Town. We saw the smirk. We know what's up. We
listen,
get it.
There's certain destinations. There's certain places. And see, former players, we'll tell you all the time. There are certain cities you would get to arrive very late, and there are certain cities you would get there extra early.
Oh, yeah.
Buffalo, they would get you there extra early. Yeah. Green Bay, you're there extra early. Houston, Miami,
Atlanta,
D.C., oh, we getting there like at the last second, the last possible second to take up all your time. Because the coaching staff, they're not stupid, I can tell you that.
Yeah, there's a reason why James Harden was trying to get back to Houston.
That's right.
That's right. You get excited when you have 713-281
in your phone.
That's right.
Always great stuff from Damian Woody. Always great stuff from True Green as well. If you're ready to elevate your lawn game without breaking the bank, True Green has been the trusted choice for over 2 million homeowners, probably also in Houston and Atlanta and all over the place, all the great NFL cities, for over 50 years. Visit TrueGreen.com today and discover the easiest and affordable way to achieve a pro-level lawn guaranteed. Plus, enjoy True Green's verified price matching, ensuring you get the best lawn for the best price. Visit TrueGreen.com and transform your lawn effortlessly. That's TrueGreen.com. Your dream lawn is just around the corner.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Yes, each and every day at this time, our producer, Pat Costello, gives us items around sports news, entertainment, and his fascinating life that he's over. Go ahead, Pat.
I mean, I'm not sure how I'm supposed to follow Canty yelling about Aaron Rodgers. That was one of the best rants of all time. But I guess I'll try.
All right, so then back to us.
Yelp reviewers? What? How are people doing this? How do you have the time on your hands to review something on Yelp? Get a life. If you bought a bad sandwich, sorry, you messed up and you bought a bad sandwich. Why are you posting about it? Get a life.
See, I always go the other way, Pat. I think that those people that post positive reviews have some type of agenda. Like, I get
why a person that would have a negative review would want to go on there, because you want to warn everybody else off of whatever they're about to purchase, yes, wherever they're about to eat, that kind of thing. But the people that go on there and wax poetic about how good the food is or how good the service is, I feel like they're relatives with the people that own the place, and that's why they're trying to big up them. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, the people that go on Yelp and leave the positive reviews. The negative reviews I get, because you want to make sure that nobody else gets got. But the positive reviews, I don't know. I'm looking at you people kind of sideways.
I am very conscious of being nice and positive to those people in life that only get the negative reviews. Not only Yelp. Like, if there's somebody at the airport, if there's somebody at the DMV, car deal, like a rental car place, I feel like you only complain to those people. At some point, somebody's got to be nice to them. I don't know who then goes into Yelp, though, and types that all out. That seems crazy to me.
Have you guys ever left a Yelp review?
No.
No.
I've only left one ever.
Was good or bad? Positive or negative?
Negative. Someone tried to steal $3,000 from me, so I wanted to warn people to never use that furniture company ever again.
Case in point. Case in point. The people that go on there and leave positive reviews, I don't know. I'm scared of you people.
I feel like that should have been a police report, Michelle.
The credit card company
got involved. It was very bad. But to that point, I wanted to make sure that no one else ever had that experience. Yeah. So I logged on to Yelp. I made an account. I left a review, and I don't think I've opened the app ever since.
Is it fraudulent, though, to only do the negative and not the positive, Smalls? Like, shouldn't you then, if you're gonna dive into the negative review, shouldn't you give a positive review somewhere?
But it was
if you like something?
It was a very extreme circumstance that elicited the negative review, and maybe I should. When I was in Boston, I had a killer sandwich at a place, so maybe at Flower Bakery in Boston, shout out to them, the turkey sandwich, outstanding. So maybe today after the show, I'll leave them a positive review.
Well, the positive review is my money. I'm paying these people. So like, the money and the tip is the positive review.
I guess you would say that.
And if the place is that good, I don't know that they need that much more publicity, because everybody already knows about it through word of mouth.
And it's filling out surveys. As someone who worked in a bunch of different industries, those surveys actually get people paid. So you go buy a car, you fill out your survey.
Really?
If they take good care of you. If you get a service at a dealership, doing that, because you do salespeople, service people get paid off of really, you know, tens on the survey. So, yeah.
I got to ask you a question then, Nuno. You sent us a survey yesterday. Did you get paid off of that?
No, but you guys would. So fill those out.
I better get that done.
Nuno's email went nuts yesterday. Nuno's email, he started sending us notes from like prior to NFL free agency.
I don't know what
happened to you yesterday, Nuno.
I don't know. Probably
he got hacked. I think Nuno got hacked yesterday. Next one, Pat.
Nuno had one that gave me like a physical reaction that I want him to bring up.
All right, I love dogs. I've always had them, you know, growing up. Dog, they're great. But this, can we stop with this fur baby thing? Like, anyone that says my fur baby, like when they're talking about their dog, or if my fur baby likes you, then I like you. Can we just stop? Like,
absolutely the worst and cringiest thing you can do, besides maybe posting pictures pretending like you're talking like your dog, like, hello, human. I hate these people. I hate what happened to dogs on the internet. Dog culture on the internet is awful.
So, why does the dog have a social media page?
I was just going to ask that. So are you guys out on dog Instagram pages?
Yeah, I
have friends that have some.
And I'm judging your friends.
I don't follow
dogs.
Dogs
are not people. Stop treating dogs like people.
Hey,
animals are
up.
Animals. No, I'm sorry.
Frankie
animals
Smallman
are animals.
Is a member
people
of
are people.
The family.
Okay, fine. But your dog is not a person. You're not saving up for college for your dog. You're not worrying about what your dog is going to do at school during the day. The human interaction that they're going to have and all of the problems that life brings us. An animal is an animal. A dog is a dog. I mean, a person is a person. We need to separate them. They're not your babies.
I don't like the term fur baby. I, too, think that is very cringe. But, Evan, you are not a dog person, so you can't understand.
I'm a parent. Like, that's the difference. You can't tell me raising a dog is similar to raising kids.
So I guess you're out on the dog being in the stroller on the sidewalk in New York City?
Oh my God.
I love that. I think it's wild, so right? I think it is so
it
funny.
It is so pretentious. My dog is in the stroller.
And it's always a pug. Right? It's always a pug.
Or send the dog to a doggy daycare that has cameras so you can check in on them.
Frankie's mama has the nanny. My parents get Frank this really expensive organic food that is supposed to be great for him. They're like, you know, what are you going to have for dinner? You're on your own. And Frankie gets the lap of luxury over there. Wow. They love him more than me, seemingly.
Some chimkin? Oh, chimkin?
What?
Chimkin. They those videos, they'll be like, oh, human, give me chimkin.
I don't know what that is.
That's what they say instead of chicken. They add an M because they think chimkin. It's cute and funny. Oh. And it's terrible and cringy, and I hate it.
No, that's awful.
That's cringe, like Nuno. That. Yeah, you could have kept that one to yourself, brother.
Because Frankie knows how to pronounce chicken correctly,
there
obviously.
There you go.
The dog?
Where's Frankie going to college, Smalls?
Yeah.
With Bronny.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.